Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
All right, well, thanks for joining us today, and we got a special guest with us. He's been with us before, but we're joined by Mark Yusko of Morgan Creek Capital, CIO and CEO. Mark just got back from speaking at a big conference down there in Grand Cayman, and Mark, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Always great to catch up with you guys.
Yeah, hey, and did you get to, I heard Will Smith was speaking. Did you hang out with Will Smith at all down there in Grand Cayman?
You know, I had to leave before Will took the stage. I did get to hang out a little bit with Danica Patrick.
Oh, there you go.
So as much as I like Will Smith, Danica is more attractive than he. she was kind of cool. She talked about a lot of different things. And actually, the guy to me who was the hit of the event was this guy, Robert O'Neill, who was the member of SEAL Team 6 that did the Osama bin Laden raid. So, you know, he gave us his, you know, blow by blow account of how that went down. And
wow.
And kind of fun being around a true American hero.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Yeah, that's boy, they've really picked up their game. That's quite a list. And then Danica Patrick.
Quite a list. And I did hear that Will was great. That he really talked about kind of his life and how he got into the business and how he's developed other interests. And, you know, one of the great lines, I guess, that he is known for is fail fast and fail forward. So, you know, not everything in life is going to work out, but if it doesn't, get it over with fast and keep moving forward. Don't look back. Don't regret. Just keep moving forward. So I thought that was a good life lesson for all of us.
Yeah, it sounds like a moniker for my career.
exactly.
Yeah.
I can relate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we got to get into. I'm gonna jump right for the. Well, first of all, I've got to say that you know, that's how you know you've crossed a threshold in your career, right? Because the speaking lineup is a SEAL from SEAL Team 6, Danica Patrick, Will Smith, and Mark Yusko of Morgan Creek Capital, right? It fits right in there.
Yeah, I'm definitely the undercard and the warm-up band, but yeah, it's pretty cool to be on a docket or on an agenda with those guys, and it's a great conference. You know, they've been doing it for a number of years. I've been fortunate to be involved every year, and you know, usually I do this thing called my 10 surprises, and this year they're like, yeah. You know, the 10 surprises are great, but what, you know, we're really talking about is digital disruption. So we'd really rather you talk about, you know, blockchain and Bitcoin and crypto and like, okay. And so I did that and really had a blast with it. So digital disruption is clearly here. And I made the joke at the end of the conversation that, you know, as long as your business has no transactions, you're safe.
Boy, that weeds out quite a few, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. So we're all at risk of disruption and blockchain is coming for us, and I think it's as big as the internet in terms of disruptive power. And you know, just like information over internet protocol changed the world, value over internet protocol is going to change the world. So pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, and it's hard not to see, you know, as an RIA, I'm positioned a little bit, you know, dealing directly with investors' retirement accounts. We're hamstrung by certain things that, you know, you're not in the accredited investor world, and we've been very cautious on the whole crypto thing because of that. But the one thing we've talked about on this show is that when you understand, you know, I mean, we don't even need to get in the fiat aspect of it, but when you understand the nature of the way blockchain works, it really is one of those things where you look at it and go, you know, this is not an if, it's a when. It's better financial freedom, it's more transparency, you know, it's truly a better mousetrap, a much better one.
Well, there's so many easy things. I mean, for example, everyone that listens to your show and everyone who has ever been involved in a real estate transaction knows this same feeling of, why did I just pay $1,000 or $1,200 for a title search? We know who owned the property. We know who owned the property before the people who owned the property owned the property. And we know I'm buying the property. So why is it that we have to pay somebody to go back to the courthouse and check that all the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed? That's just a embedded, you know, industry that has made themselves a niche that people are, you know, they keep perpetuating it, even though on a blockchain, it would be one and done, right?
Yeah.
And I do a real estate transaction. I transfer the property to you. My name goes off the ledger and your name goes on, and boom, it's done forever. No one has to pay anybody anything. You know, or why is it that, you know, good, hardworking person decides to send some money back to their family in another country and Western Union takes 12% of it, and there are two banks in the whole world that are called international settlements banks, and they take a piece. Like, why is that? Well, because for 400 years we've been doing it that way, and nobody stands up to say that doesn't make any sense.
Well, it makes sense if you're the bank.
You do it for zero.
It makes sense if you're one of those two banks.
Oh, sure it does. Well, it's like the head of the BIS, you know, the Bank of International Settlements.
Right.
You know, he's all over the internet, you know, railing about how cryptocurrency and Bitcoin are evil and they need to be preempted and they need to be regulated. And I'm like, let me translate for you. These threaten my job.
Right.
That's the translation.
Right. Well, and the one thing I remember sitting in my office. This is back in my when I was just a regular broker. And I remember sitting in my office the day that Bitcoin was launched and watching it and sitting there thinking to myself, you know, and I wasn't in a position to do so at the time. But I remember thinking, you know, this would be something to throw a little money. Everybody's got one of these stories. I didn't buy it, you know, so I'm not going to sit there and try to say my cost basis is, you know, $30 of Bitcoin. But I went, you know, to me, I sat there and I went, you know, this is the first salvo. This is the first shot across the bow of this monopoly that we, or as it should be known, in my opinion, this whole fiat currency regime. This is the first shot over the bow, because talk about repression, talk about control and control over people and, you know, playing by your own rules. This whole fiat currency thing has gotten so out of control. You know, I hate to coin the phrase, or I hate to use the phrase because it's associated with more radicals, but talk about transferring power back truly to the people would be, you know, this whole crypto thing. It really is.
There's no question. Look, this is a, you know, it started with a libertarian kind of power to the people movement, but it's much bigger than that. You know, this truly is a democratization of value. You know, value today is being transferred from the masses to the few. And, you know, you look at everything from this horrible tax bill that got passed that, you know, just furthers income inequality, which is at the highest level it's ever been in our history as a country. And you look at all of these things that fiat currency does. I mean, think about this for one second. You know, someone just paid $450 million for a single painting. What does that mean that the value of the currency in which that was denominated, what happened to it?
Well, but there's no inflation.
There's no inflation.
There's
right?
none.
There's none.
No.
Yeah, we just heard another, you know, announced. Although it's hilarious, you know, the number comes out this morning that CPI is 2.1, even though it actually was 2.07, down from 2.11 the previous month. And people are saying, oh, my gosh, it's a huge inflation spike. I'm like, what are you talking about? A huge inflation spike is when I traveled to Switzerland last year and I had to pay $8.50 for a cup of coffee at Starbucks. And that's inflation.
Right. But, you know, it's on its way, right? I mean, it's not going to be isolated to Switzerland, or right? Don't you think this is going to be... You know, it seems to me the perfect tipping point, right? Because everybody and their mother is worried about deflation. When we talk about risks in the market, and I talk about this with clients all the time, we've got to identify different risks. The only risk that anybody pays attention to anymore is deflation or prices going down.
Yeah.
That's what they're worried about, right?
Yep.
Well, for those of you that are just joining us, we're with Mark Yusko, the CEO and CIO, Chief Investment Officer of Morgan Creek Capital. And I think this is a perfect transition into our next topic. But it kind of reminds me of the vol scenario, right? Regardless of whether it's inflation or whether it's volatility or whatever, there's this old, you know, tribal knowledge. And I remember my grandfather and father taught it to me. When everybody's crowded onto one side of the boat, just go. It's going to be a lonely walk. You're probably going to be by yourself, but go sit on the other side because it's only a matter of time till it tips back, right?
Oh, my gosh. So true.
And that's what we just saw with vol, is it not? Volatility.
Yeah, look, volatility is an interesting thing. You know, one of the challenges of thinking about volatility is, you know, we've been conditioned in a Pavlovian way through the media to think about VIX as the fear index, and that it's some indicator of levels of valuation and fear in the market, and it's just wrong.
Right.
Right. What VIX is, it's the level, it's a measure, it's a current indicator. It's not a leading indicator or a lagging indicator. It's a current indicator of what you and I or anybody else in the options markets will transact options at. What price will we transact a transfer of risk of whatever that option happens to be on, whether it's an individual stock or an index or whatever. But it's a measure of how much incentive do I need to take to make that transaction. And in times where I am complacent, right,
yep,
I am not willing to pay very much for insurance. And so that's why the VIX tends toward what's called serial autocorrelation, which is the fancy word for the trend continues. So whether the trend is going up or down, it tends to continue in a fashion that tends to take it to extremes. And we've been in this downward trend similar to the 1950s, similar to the 1960s, similar to the 1990s. For whatever reason, it tends to happen in the late stages of economic cycles when liquidity is plentiful. And so, you know, we got to this situation where people became complacent and not worried about risk and volatility. But then there was a little other insidious thing that happened. And that was the banks around the world started jumping on the bandwagon of structuring product to sell to Ma and Pa and insurance companies and pension funds who really have no business speculating on volatility.
No kidding.
But they made it easy for them, and everybody started doing it, whether they were writing options or whether they were buying these double-levered short volatility ETFs. And the problem with all of them is what I call... And I didn't coin the term, someone else did, but it's the turkey trouble problem. You know, a turkey has a great life for about 1,000 days.
Yeah.
But day 1,001 really sucks.
Yeah, it's all over.
Yeah, and if you look at the chart of XIV, it kind of looks the same. It basically went straight up hundreds and hundreds of percent for 3 years, and then overnight it was gone.
Right.
And that's the danger that we have right now. And, you know, I do these, those 10 surprises that we talked about. And, you know, one of my surprises this year was keyed by a cartoon that I saw that was a, you know, rest in peace, Vix, you know, grave site with Janet Yellen and a bull and a bear, you know, dressed in black suits, crying over the Vix index, saying
when,
that, you know,
when, Vix is, when did that come out?
That came out in November.
Okay, perfect.
So I did my surprises in third week of January, and I put that cartoon up, and I said, you know, guys, everybody thinks volatility is dead. Everybody thinks it's going to keep going down. You know, we set an all-time record first trading day of the year for the VIX index, and, you know, last year there were 52 days below 10. We'd never had a year below 4 in history. So my surprise was that, to your point of going to the other side of the boat, the other side of the boat, which was empty, I mean completely empty,
oh, yeah,
was volatility is going to come back and could come back in a big way. Now, I didn't think it would happen 3 weeks later, to be honest. But it did.
Yep.
So
it's the whole vol thing to me is really interesting. And we've been focused on it for quite a while. And I want to continue this conversation when we get back. We got to take a quick break. And for those of you that are just joining us, we're with Mark Yusko. He's going to stay with us through the break. We're going to be right back. And stick with us for more of this conversation. And we're going to talk about China coming up. We're going to continue this talk on vol. And we're going to talk about the markets in general. So thanks for joining us. And this is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
I had never before worked with a financial advisor or endorsed a firm because I always saw the same cookie cutter stock bond split recommendation, bonds for safety. That's not helping right now. Hey, it's Dory Monson. I love the way Zach Abraham and Bulwark Capital actively manage our portfolio instead of all the other guys that just have the ride it out mentality. Zach, you do it differently.
Yeah, Dory, we sure do. We take a risk management approach, meaning that we're constantly looking for ways to lower our clients' exposure to risk without giving up upside performance. The traditional stock bond portfolio absolutely will not deliver similar results to the past. You have to do things differently.
This is your retirement. Get a second opinion. Call now. Schedule a risk review. Get your free copy of Common Sense Investing, 866-779-RISK, 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management, a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Hey, this is Dory Monson. I'm here with Brian Ott from 525 Advisors, host of Long-Term Care Radio, right here on Cairo every Saturday morning at 7. And Brian, you have a class coming up in Bellevue March 10th. A great way to learn about long-term care planning. What do you think is the one thing our listeners really need to know?
It's that the government doesn't pay for long-term care, Dory, and there's really only two ways to pay for care. One is to self-fund and watch everything you've worked hard for get whittled down by the high cost of care, or the second way is to protect your savings and your family by setting up a long-term care plan.
Which is exactly what my wife and I did with Brian. I encourage you to do the same. Sign up for Brian's next class, March 10th. Learn how you can protect your savings and the people you care about the most with the newest programs, including plans that pay you back if you never use them. Sign up at 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com. And you can always learn more by tuning in every Saturday morning at 7 for Long-Term Care Radio here on Cairo.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back, and thank you for sticking with us. And we're going to continue our discussion with Mark Yusko, the CEO and CIO, Chief Investment Officer of Morgan Creek Capital. Mark, thank you for joining us. And
great to be with you, as always.
All right, and we are your second home, right?
Absolutely, not
currently, but this was the birthing ground, if you will.
It'll always be home.
There
it'll
you
always
go.
Always be home, and any radio station that starts with a K warms my heart. instead of all the W's out here on the East Coast, but you know, I grew up with the big yellow KGR ball in the back of my first car. So
oh, there you go.
Always
yeah.
be home.
Yeah, you're right at home. So I want to, while I've got you here, would you want to jump back into this conversation of volatility? Because it's one of those things, and I'm going to kind of lay something out there, and I want you to tell me where I'm right and where I'm wrong, or, you know, what your take on it is. But when I look at the world over the past 9 years – this little volatility explosion to me is caught. I just, first of all, it amazes me how many people have got this completely wrong. For instance, if you're listening to Jim Cramer talking about volatility, this is no personal knock on Jim Cramer at all, but for God's sakes, find a new source of information, because I've never heard so many completely wrong things come out of one person's mouth regarding one topic. But I look at the world over the last 9 years, and it's really, to me, it's a model of selling vol. I feel like the central bankers have been selling vol, retail clients have been selling vol, and then we've seen this little vol explosion. And the thing that I don't understand is when you dive deep into the selling volatility trade, and you know much more about this than I do, but the thing that blew me away about it, and I'm not saying this to brag, but we actually got, we reinstituted long vol positions 2 weeks ago. Small ones. Wish they'd have been bigger. but, you know, it's been such a widow maker over the last 3 years that I was trepidatious about putting the positions on. But the thing that blew my mind is when you understood the structure of these short vol products, it was simply a matter of time. I mean, every day that this trade went on, that breaking point of where the VIX had to go to snap all of those ETFs was constantly going down due to the, you know, the process of shorting those contracts, right? They were just, they were suppressing that break-even point. And why does this stuff catch everybody off guard? I don't understand why these things that are, you know, it's like the mortgage crisis. You know, the idea that real estate's going to go up 8% a year into perpetuity. I don't get why, almost like a fantasy land world, why people buy it.
Well, no, I mean, come on, this is easy, right? People like free money. Human beings love free money. And anything that's free, whether it's portfolio insurance in 1987, where it was kind of a similar thing, you sold volatility through these big complicated derivative contracts, and you were guaranteed a return. It was, you know, long-term capital management in 1998. You know, it was guaranteed. You know, convergence trading is a sure thing. And look, convergence trading, just so everybody knows what that is, you know, if you think about two bonds, a 30-year bond and a 29-year bond, a 30-year bond called On the Run, and because it's more popular, it trades at a 5-basis-point discount to the off-the-run bond. Well, one thing we know for sure is in 365 days, that on-the-run bond becomes an off-the-run bond, and its price falls by 5 basis points. So there's a natural time arbitrage. It's not a valuation. You know, it's not a question of what you think versus what I think. It's just we know with certainty in 365 days, you go from on-the-run to off-the-run. The problem is intra-365 days, that price can go from 5 basis points to 10 basis points or 15 basis points wide. And if I, you know, sold one bond and bought another bond for a difference of 5 basis points, yeah, big deal, right? Don't make a lot of money. But if I lever it up 2 times, now I make 15 basis points. Oh, that's interesting. If I lever it up 50 times, now that's really interesting.
Mm.
But to your point, when you have these volatility contracts where they're tightening down like a coiled spring, and every time another participant comes in, just like putting another turn of leverage on that convergence trade, it takes a smaller and smaller change or a smaller and smaller loss to lose a lot of money. And look, I have family members up in the Pacific Northwest that lived through this in the mortgage boom in 06, 07, right? Normal people buy a mortgage, they put 20% down, they borrow 80%, 4-to-1 leverage. And then somebody says, well, 4-to-1's good, 5-to-1's better. So they put 10% down. And now, you know, the price goes up, I make even more money. Well, if 5 times is good, then 10 times is better. So, you know, they put a smaller amount down.
Right.
And eventually you realize, what if I put no money down? What if I got 100% mortgage between a mortgage and a second mortgage? Now I have an infinite return because I have no capital invested. I have no equity invested. So every dollar that the price goes up, that's pure profit. Well, that works great as long as what? As right. long as the price is rising.
Right.
But as soon as the price goes down, if you have 100% mortgage, you can afford no price fall. If you have a 90% mortgage, you can, you know, survive a little bit. If you have an 80% mortgage, you can survive a little bit more. If you have a 50% mortgage, you can survive a little bit more. If you have no mortgage, right, price could fall 20%. Doesn't matter.
Right.
But you got an 80% mortgage, price falls 20%. You've lost all your equity, 100%. So leverage, derivatives, all of these things are perfectly fine tools. There's nothing wrong with leverage. Having a mortgage, there's nothing wrong with it, with prudent equity. Having a derivative or a derivative contract, nothing wrong with it, as long as you have prudent collateral underneath. Having, you know, a leveraged ETN, not a problem,
right?
Unless you have too much leverage for the amount of volatility that will happen. So to one of your earlier points, yeah, you can go 4 years, 5 years, 7 years, 8 years, however many years the Fed wants to intervene in markets to suppress volatility. That certainly can and did happen. But it can't happen in perpetuity, because at some point somebody's going to need to take money out for, you know, graduation or to buy a house or to pay a bill or to pay taxes. And then someone else is going to see that the price changed, and then they're going to panic a little bit. And then suddenly there's going to be a bad story about whatever, inflation or growth. And then, boom, volatility blows out, and all these people who are caught short, they have turkey trouble. Day 1001, not a good day.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it, too, because those were, yeah, those things were blowing up. The other thing that I'm looking at here is, and hey, look, I could certainly be wrong. It's happened before. Ask my wife. It happened more times than I like to admit. But for those of you that are just joining us, we're with Mark Yusko, the CEO and CIO, Chief Investment Officer of Morgan Creek Capital. I'm looking at this whole volatility thing, and you know, we got the Dow up right now. Markets surging ahead. It's recovering the losses. S&P's up 28. Dow's up 156. You know, everybody, you know, the Jim Cramers of the world, oh, this is a blip. The bull market continues. I don't believe that this volatility issue is over. I do not believe that the unwind on volatility has happened. Everybody was horrified that the VIX reached 40. Maybe it spiked to 50 one time. I cannot see this unwind being over. I think this is a kind of a market head fake. What is your take on where we go? Is the volatility issue over now? Is everything okay? Or is this dog still got some bark left in him?
Yeah, let's think about this for a second. So remember, volatility is really a second order effect. It's a second derivative. It, you know, volatility is a measure of market activity ex post. So it's not the volatility that's causing the problem. It's the investor complacency or investor panic that causes the problem. So, you know, we've had investor complacency for a number of years now. People are buying assets, particularly equities, particularly U.S. equities and other developed market equities, at prices that really just don't make sense, right?
Yeah.
You know, Amazon, good hometown favorite. It's a great company.
Yep.
It's a great business. They dominate the markets that they're in. But their price earnings ratio is too high. And people say, oh, but they could turn on the profit machine anytime. Really? If they could, they probably would have.
Right.
And one thing I know is that anytime people say, oh, the profits in the future will be so much higher that it justifies me paying, you know, 200 or 300 times earnings, it's never worked out in all of history.
Nope.
Right? Cisco in 2000, Microsoft in 2000. You know, Microsoft took 18 years to get back to their previous peak. Cisco's still down almost 50% from their peak in 2000. So there are these companies that just get to these silly valuations, but as long as people keep buying, and yeah, you know, it's almost silly to talk about, but it really is like the emperor has no clothes, right?
Yeah.
The children's story. As long as nobody's willing to speak up, it will go on. And what it takes is the innocence of the child who says, wait a minute, the king doesn't have any clothes on. No, he has beautiful clothes. Everybody knows he has beautiful clothes. Well, no, I don't see any clothes. There's no clothes there. And I think the same thing's true with valuation. Is what it takes is somebody or somebodies to wake up one day and say, you know, this just doesn't make sense. It takes someone like yourself who starts where an investment advisor should start, not with return, not with hype, not with markets, but with risk management, discipline, process, you know, buy things that are inexpensive, sell things that are expensive, rebalance on a periodic basis. Don't look at your account every day or every week or every month. Don't chase hot returns because they always mean revert. Always buy into weakness when things go on sale. You know, it's funny, in everything that we do in our lives, we seek out quality, we look for bargains, except in the markets. In the markets, we tend to flock to the whatever story, regardless of quality, as long as it's a great popular story. We don't search for bargains. In fact, we do the opposite. You know, we overpay for things because they're popular. And then the other thing that drives me personally crazy is we substitute this idea that a low fee is a proxy for a good idea.
Right.
So an ETF with a low fee is better than an actively managed portfolio with a high fee. Well, that's absurd. In what business, of any business that any of us knows, doctor, lawyer, football coach, basketball player, does the best person make the least amount of money?
Right.
Nowhere.
Right.
Nowhere. And if you were going in for surgery tomorrow, you know, going into whatever, you know, whether you use group health or, you know, go to UW Medical Center, wherever you want to go, you walk in, you raise your hand and say, can I have the cheapest surgeon today? No one would ever do that.
No.
And yet we buy these low vol ETFs, which might be the most dangerous and horrible investment product ever created, because what do? They buy stock in things that have low volatility of price. That's their only criteria. They right. don't look at the quality of the business. They don't look at the quality of the pricing. They just buy things that have a low volatility price. So right now, they're all hyped up about Boeing. Again, I'm going to pick on Boeing because Boeing, again, is a great company.
Hey,
the stock price.
Yeah, go ahead. We've been talking about this one for a while. This one's a mind blower.
It's a great company.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic company. They make great products. I love their products. I use them all the time. But the price of the stock today is ridiculous, 33 times earnings for a company growing at 2 or 3% top line. That doesn't make sense, but it has low volatility of stock price. So these ETFs buy it. And we saw the same thing with Exxon a year ago. Exxon was their favorite, and they pushed Exxon up to 42 times earnings. ExxonMobil is an industrial conglomerate, cyclical. It had never traded above 20 times in its history until 2 years ago when these stupid ETF things started buying it. And then it cracked, and it went from 96 down to 80. So you just want to focus on discipline. You want to focus on execution and doing the things that make sense. And you just got to step away from this hype and step away from if it were easy to make double-digit returns, wouldn't everybody be rich?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But over the last 20 years, the average return for individuals is 3%.
Right.
Where the average return for stocks is 8, the average return for bonds is 6. Well, why did the average individual make 3? Well, because human beings do two things really, really, really well. We buy what we wish we would have bought, and we sell what we're about to need.
Yeah.
So we're constantly buying the thing that's already gone up,
right.
Like Tesla stock, right?
Yep.
So no one bought Tesla at $36, but they want to buy tons of it at $360. It doesn't make any sense.
Or NVIDIA, or Boeing, or Microsoft, or Facebook.
Yeah.
Or
at least NVIDIA. Not that I love NVIDIA per se, but at least NVIDIA is still growing fast.
Right. At least there's a story there. Yeah.
Yeah. At least they're still growing. Now, any company selling at 10 times revenues, I loved it when Oracle hit 10 times revenues in 2000. The CEO said, okay, here's what would have to happen for us to be able to justify our current stock price of 10 times revenues. For the next 10 years, I would have to pay out 100% of my revenue in dividends, which might be hard given that I have 34,000 employees that would like to get paid. And I would have to have zero cost of goods sold, which would be kind of hard because the chip companies like to get paid for their chips that go into our machines and into our engineers for our software. I would have to pay out 100% of all of our revenues as a dividend, which would be really hard to get past our board because, you know, they like their stock price to go up as well. So 10 times revenues is a number that can't really have a high return long term. Now, that said, of all the companies out there that have a really good business right now, NVIDIA's one because, and AMD too, because we are shifting from the CPU world to the GPU world.
Right.
And the best way I can explain this, it's truly dazzling. Someone showed me the example of this. If I said, and I'll do it right now, who am I talking about? 6'4", muscled, beard, big nose, smiles, wore a top hat. You got it yet?
Yeah. I know who you're talking to.
Okay, Abraham Lincoln,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And it took however long it took us, 20 seconds to get to Abraham Lincoln. If I flash up a picture of Abraham Lincoln, the brain knows Abraham Lincoln in, you know, a 20th of a microsecond.
Right.
So CPU processing is going through 6'4", muscled, beard. That's CPU processing. GPU processing is image processing. It can know that that's Abraham Lincoln in microseconds and be on to the next transaction or next calculation. So the order of magnitude change as we go from a CPU world to a GPU world is monstrous. There's this new movie coming out, Ready Player One. So I was at a conference that I spoke at down in L.A. before I went to Cayman, and they had a preview of this Ready Player One. The entire movie was shot in CGI.
Wow. So
imagine Steven Spielberg with a VR headset and the actors in those suits with the little ping pong balls all over them wearing VR headsets and going through the motions in a virtual set. That's a lot of computing power.
That's incredible.
Pretty cool.
Incredible. Yeah, it is. I guess that's the interesting backdrop about where we are. We got to take a quick break. And for those of you that just joining us, we're with Mark Yusko. He's going to stay with us through the break. We're going to be right back. Thanks for joining us, and this is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
I had never before worked with a financial advisor or endorsed a firm because I always saw the same cookie cutter stock bond split recommendation, bonds for safety. That's not helping right now. Hey, it's Story Monson. I love the way Zach Abraham and Bulwark Capital actively manage our portfolio instead of all the other guys that just have the ride it out mentality. Zach, you do it differently.
Yeah, Dory, we sure do. We take a risk management approach, meaning that we're constantly looking for ways to lower our clients' exposure to risk without giving up upside performance. The traditional stock bond portfolio absolutely will not deliver similar results to the past. You have to do things differently.
This is your retirement. Get a second opinion. Call now, schedule a risk review, get your free copy of Common Sense Investing, 866-779-RISK, 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management, a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Hey, this is Dory Monson. I'm here with Brian Ott from 525 Advisors, host of Long Term Care Radio, right here on Cairo every Saturday morning at 7. And Brian, you have a class coming up in Bellevue March 10th, a great way to learn about long term care planning. What do you think is the one thing our listeners really need to know?
It's that the government doesn't pay for long-term care, Dory, and there's really only two ways to pay for care. One is to self-fund and watch everything you've worked hard for get whittled down by the high cost of care, or the second way is to protect your savings and your family by setting up a long-term care plan.
Which is exactly what my wife and I did with Brian. I encourage you to do the same. Sign up for Brian's next class, March 10th. Learn how you can protect your savings and the people you care about the most with the newest programs, including plans that pay you back if you never use them. Sign up at 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com. And you can always learn more by tuning in every Saturday morning at 7 for Long Term Care Radio here on Cairo.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham.
Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back, and thank you for sticking with us. And we're going to continue our discussion with Mark Yusko, the CEO and CIO, Chief Investment Officer of Morgan Creek Capital. Do you think, when we're looking at the world, we look at these markets, right? Most overvalued markets, pretty much on 9 out of 10 metrics you look at, most overvalued markets in history. And you do have these, there are these good stories, there are these incredible things happening. But tying this all back into the volatility thing, I know that pinning, calling tops or is futile. It's a waste of time. I've learned it both anecdotally and personally. We've got to be getting close to a maximization point here, though. One of the things that again I was trained to look for is when it all gets ridiculous, right? And you said something really key that I think a lot of people are looking past right now. You talked about Boeing's cash flow, and I think the numbers that we had were at like 3.2%. I could be a little bit off, but 3.2%, and you got a company trading at 33 times earnings, and we just went over that.
Yeah.
But when we break that down on an asset, asset to asset basis, you know what else yields right around 3%? The U.S. 10-year. Now, I'm not saying that I think that's a great purchase right now. I think rates are going higher, but isn't that sort of where the elastic or the elasticity breaks down when you've got essentially risk-free assets now yielding the same amount of cash flow as these assets that are bid up to these unbelievable levels? I mean, isn't that kind of where the rubber meets the road, where you'd think everybody'd wake up and say, wait a second, I'm putting all this capital to risk over here for the same cash flow I can get out of something that's guaranteed? What am I doing?
Well, it's exactly the right analysis, and unfortunately, very few people do the analysis, right? The reason stock prices go to wild extremes, and they tend to wild extremes and wild both ways, right? Extreme positive and extreme negative. If you think about a pendulum, the way a pendulum works, we know what the center point of the path is. We know what fair value is, but a pendulum spends almost zero time at the middle, right? It's either on its way to one level of overvaluation or on its way to undervaluation. So that pendulum keeps swinging back and forth. And so the challenge you have is human behavior tends toward, exacerbating trends until they turn. And, George Soros had a great line about this. He says, fighting the trend while it's going on is kind of futile. I mean, it's really not something you should do. What you need to do is when the trend starts to change, that's when you need to separate from the herd and do something independent. We have two problems right now, as I see it, and it hit me like a ton of gold bricks. I used to be on this thing of normal logic value investor guy that I've been trained my whole career, which was, hey, price to sales is too high, price to earnings is too high, all these metrics are too high. But then someone showed me this great chart, and it shows the S&P 500 divided by an ounce of gold. And when you deflate the nominal price of equities by gold, which is real money, right? An ounce of gold bought a fine man suit for 4,000 years.
Yep.
So it's the real store of value. When you do that, we're actually lower today than 2007 and actually significantly lower than we were in 2000. And so when I say it hit me like a ton of gold bricks, what that means is, starting tomorrow night, it'll be the year of the dog, Chinese New Year, Lunar New Year. And I say, no, that's what Chinese call it. To me, we're in the year of the frog. And we are slowly being boiled like a frog.
Agreed.
We've all heard that thing. If you drop a frog in hot water, it jumps out. But if you put him in cold water and slowly turn up the water, he gets boiled to death because he doesn't feel it coming. And that's what's been happening to us. So if you look at the history of banana republics, dictatorships and bad emerging markets, Zimbabwe, Venezuela, wherever you want to talk about, Argentina before Macri got in, what do? The elite class deflates the currency and inflates the value of assets. Why? Because the elites are the only ones that own the assets. I mean, think about these stats. 14% of people in the United States own a stock outside their 401k. 14%. Okay, that means 86% don't. Only 50 own any stock at all, including their 401ks.
Wow.
So half the people in America don't own a single share of any type. Most people don't own a lot of real estate. Most people don't own a lot of business assets. So most people don't own art or collectible cars. You know, there's the guy in Seattle, one of the original Microsofties. You know, he competes with Jay Leno and Jerry
Seinfeld?
Seinfeld. Jerry Seinfeld to buy these collectible Porsches. You know, $30, $40 million for a single hunk of metal. And great, you got all the money in the world. Do whatever you want with it. That's not my point. But my point is they're devaluing the currency and concentrating the wealth in the hands of a very small number of people. And that's the boiling the frog problem. And so when people say the market's overvalued and it's going to crash, I'm like, geez, I used to believe that. Now I think it's all part of the plan, is that it's a nominal inflation. Why do you think Trump tweets about the stock market all the time? Because he owns a lot of stocks. I mean, that's who owns the stocks. It's the senators and the congressmen and the business executives and the lobbyists. And it's not a really good story for the average American that a small handful of names keep getting higher and higher and higher in price. And it's like this tax, I call it tax deform instead of tax reform. I mean, it's the worst law that money could buy. Because what it does, everybody's, everybody got these $1,000 bonuses. I think the total announced bonuses are like $2.6 billion or something. The tax savings of corporate America runs into the high tens of billions, like 80 or 90 billion, which is going to go into share buybacks, which is going to go into enriching the management teams that own low-priced stock options. That's where the money's going. That's just kleptocracy. That's just corporate theft. And that's what's going on. So I worry that while we all are worried about what we've been taught about valuation and how the market should correct and how volatility should rise, it really is under the control of the central banks. And the central banks exist for one purpose and one purpose only. Central banks were created in 1913. The U.S. central banks created in 1913. Interestingly, the guy who pushed it through was the father-in-law of John D. Rockefeller. Why was that important? Well, if you control the banks, then you control everything. And a very small number of people control the banks. A very small number of people control corporate America. And if that's where all the concentration of wealth goes, that's why we've had this hollowing out of the middle class. Middle class wages have been stagnant for 30-plus years. So probably more of a rabbit hole that you want me to go down, but it's a very interesting dilemma that we have.
For those of you that are just joining us, we're with Mark Yusko, the CEO and CIO, Chief Investment Officer of Morgan Creek Capital. And you brought something up. While we've still got some time here, you brought up another thing I want to talk to you about, because I love the hashtag on Twitter you use about China playing Go. Now,
yeah,
I don't think a lot of people know what Go is. It's a game that, I mean, you probably say it is at the very least, maybe 100 to maybe even 1,000 times more complex than chess. And these games can go on infinitely. It's pretty, actually a great documentary on Netflix about the game Go, and everybody should check it out. Very interesting. But I look at China and I hear exactly what you're saying, but I look at China in very much the same way that I see Vol, or I saw Vol, in the sense that I look at this thing. And, Kyle Bass has talked a lot about this. He's been made fun of a lot because it certainly hasn't gone that way. They can't keep this up. I mean.
Oh, no, they can. See, here's the crazy thing.
Is it all about current account surplus? Is that it? I mean, is that what's going to enable them to keep
China,
this up?
When I say China's playing Go, what I mean by that is they're playing the most complex board game ever created, and it's thousands of years old. And the rest of us are arguing about how to set up the checkerboard. We're not even playing checkers. Now, Putin plays chess, so he's actually pretty smart too. But our administration are buffoons on a comparable basis. When you look at the quality of the head of finance ministry in China versus our finance guy. Joke. Total joke. When you look at their head of policy and planning versus our head of, you know, health and human resource, joke. I mean, it's comical, right? Whoever paid the most to get the position versus actually having Western educated, really highly talented, long-term thinkers. And Xi, the president of China, he's not even in the same solar system as our president in terms of intellect, in terms of strategy, in terms of vision.
Well, and to be fair, China, you could probably have said that regardless of who got elected in this last election.
Absolutely. Yeah. No question.
Right.
Again, I'm not picking on Trump per se. I'm just saying that China plays a different game. They think in decades and millennia, literally. And, you know, here's the amazing thing. So when Xi got reelected this time, he did two things that were amazing. One, he got his name put in the Constitution, like Deng and Mao, and that's pretty amazing. Second thing he did is he changed, for the last 30 years, the stated goal of China was a harmonious rise. Right? It's almost poetry.
Right.
And he changed it to become a global superpower by 2050. Not by 2020 or 2030, by 2050, right? They think in decades, and they're doing things like their high-speed rail system. I don't know if you've been on a train lately in America. It's a horrifying experience.
Yeah.
Well, you guys had the big derailment out there, right?
Yeah, too long ago.
And that was human error, but it's just a horrifying experience to go on a train on the East Coast compared to going on a bullet train in China. Or you go to a port in China versus, you know, where I was at the Long Beach port down in L.A. I mean, I got lost, but it's a horrifying place. And they are doing things that people just can't comprehend in terms of building up infrastructure, building up a consumptive base, and what people really, really don't get, and this is where the big change is, up until a few years ago, it was all about made in China, right?
Right.
American companies, European companies, we outsourced our labor to China and increased our own profits by exploiting their cheap labor, and we dumped all our pollutants there. Remember, L.A. was not a good place to visit in the 70s because of the smog. The Cuyahoga River used to catch on fire in Ohio because we sent so many pollutants down it. Now we do all that in China. So we'd send all our pollution over to China, and we sell all, you know, all of our child labor exploitation. We do that in China, and we act like we're pure of heart, which is just a joke. But so China's now said, wait a second. Okay, so now we've got enough wealth and we've taken enough people out of abject poverty and we've urbanized enough people that now we can transition, just like the United States did from 1944 to 2004, from a great manufacturing power, which the United States was in 1944, to a great consumptive power, where 72 cents out of every dollar GDP in the United States comes from consumption. So we're about to witness the greatest consumptive transition in the history of the world. And now it's going to be about made for China. They're going to consume more cars, more oil, more electricity, more pollution control. They're going to use more uranium because they don't have a fear of nuclear energy because they know it's clean. They're shutting down their coal plants because they're dirty. They're cleaning the air. I was in Shanghai in October, beautiful sunny day, as nice as any day you'd find in Seattle. And people are like, no, that's not possible. They have pollution all the time. I'm like, yeah, they used to. And now they still have bad pollution days. Don't get me wrong. They still have pollution problems. But the days I was there, and I was there for 3 days, beautiful all 3 days. I'll send you a picture. It was amazing. So it's just they're doing things at a different level. And the one thing that people really don't get is that they point to the debt. And that's what Kyle points to, and it's where he and I just differ, is he says the debt's got to blow up. Well, that's true if you owe the debt to someone else. Like, he wants to compare it to Mexico. Comparing China to Mexico is just, and Kyle's a friend, and that's why I'm picking on him, but it's just wrong. I mean, Mexico owed money to everybody else. They had a balance of payments problem. China owns both sides. The state-owned enterprises, owned by the state, owe money to the banks, which are owned by the state. So if the state has the liability and the asset, what happens? They can just cancel it. So 40% of the reported debt isn't real. It's kind of like Japan right now. Japan's winning right now. They have the highest growth of any developed market in the world in terms of profit growth. Why? Well, because the government, the Bank of Japan, has bought up all the government bonds. So they could actually literally cancel the debt and start over. Because that could never happen. Yes, it can. It happened in 1863 in the UK. Right? They decided to cancel all the debt, and they gathered up all the tally sticks, which is how you used to keep track of debt. You and I have a debt. I loan you $20. We take a stick, we break it in half, we carve a notch on it, and that's how we kept track of the debt, because there were no accounting records. There was no dual entry. Well, there was dual entry accounting, but there were no, you know, there was no QuickBooks back then.
Right, right.
And so now what's going to happen is we're going to transition from dual entry accounting and consolidated ledgers to blockchain. So going all the way back to our original conversation, how does this all come back to blockchain and distributed ledger technology is we all start over with tokens and crypto and global currencies, which the economists predicted in 1988, that would happen this year in 2018, which is kind of cool. And there we go. So that's a long-winded way of saying China's not as messed up as people think. They're playing a game that most of us don't understand. And they have 40% net savings because everybody, they don't have a Social Security net. So people save their money, and they have this massive opportunity to lever up their economy because the consumer doesn't have any debt, and actually businesses that aren't owned by the government, private businesses, don't have any debt. So they've got the chance over the next 30 or 40 years to become a version of what the United States became over the last 30 years as the boomers aged, and think about the wealth creation that happened over that period. So I could go on all day about the e-commerce companies. I mean, think about Alibaba didn't exist 15 years ago.
Right.
And it's about to become the largest company in the world over the next 2 years. That's extraordinary. Tencent, right, which sets the standard. I mean, most people don't even know what WeChat is. And WeChat is the killer app.
It's right? What it, well, and that's one of the reasons we're a shareholder. WeChat is everything that you see the social media programs here in the United States trying to become, right? It's this this one-stop shop. We can pay with it, we can chat with it, we can, you know, buy stuff with it.
Yes.
It really
is. Hopefully it's not as susceptible to hacks, like my Twitter just got hacked, so I apologize to anybody who follows me on Twitter. Who is getting all these crazy tweets from the guy in Atlanta who stole my cell phone yesterday.
Yeah, I was going to say that the tone of your usually informative and concise tweets took a turn south last night. And
3:45 yesterday afternoon. It's the craziest thing. They literally somehow got into an AT&T store, and somebody gave someone with no ID, no password, a SIM card that then they SIM swapped my phone and then went in and changed all my passwords because, you know, your iPhone is linked to all your accounts. And so I've had a great day of identity theft whatever I'm trying to do. Amelioration.
Yeah. So when do we get back to, when are we going to get you back up and running on Twitter again?
I don't know. I mean, I opened a new one at Mark Yusko 1. But I'm trying to get to Twitter to have them help me. I mean, I would think, given that I'm a verified account, that they would help me. But so far, they're not helping me.
Well, we're gonna have to
making me mad.
We're gonna have to get those guys going. Well, hey, I really appreciate. I feel like I could sit here and do this for 3 hours with you, and I know you've got to get going. So I really.
Well, anytime, call me back. You know, I said I have a soft spot for the Northwest, so anytime you want to do it, let's just do it.
Well, we're going to make you regret that, and we're gonna stay on top of you. But I can't thank you enough for joining us. And for those of you that don't know, we're talking to Mark Yusko, CEO, CIO of Morgan Creek Capital. He was kind enough to share his thoughts and insights with us. So, Mark, thank you so much for joining us. And I hope to have you on again soon. And I hope you guys have enjoyed this chat. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.